Looking for a guiding hand in your Amazon business? Wizards of Ecom Academy is here for you. Our personalized support system includes unlimited email access to myself and my entire team to help you overcome challenges and strategize effectively. Sign up for an exclusive rate at wizardsofecom.com/academy. Your personal e-commerce coach awaits.
Welcome to the Wizards of Ecom, your no-fluff playbook for online success. Each episode is fully packed with actionable tactics you can implement in your business right now. Take your life to a higher level and excel in your online success. It's time to work on you and your business. Let's do this.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wizards of Ecom. My name is Amy, and I'm going to be your host. This is the second thing. Paul is laughing. I'm Isras, his name, and I'm so embarrassed because I'm the one who's always, so I have a very difficult name, Noemi. Most Americans do not know how to pronounce my name. And this was like the first time I pronounced your name wrong, and I'm truly sorry.
Don't. It doesn't matter. My name is Paul, and good afternoon, good evening, good morning. How are you doing, world? I'm great, by the way.
There you go. So he presented himself. Awesome. So we have Paul Wissan. He's a therapist and mindset coach. And the reason I wanted to have you on the show, Paul, is I especially like something about you, that you're saying that you're empowering ambitious entrepreneurs to overcome imposter syndrome and build rock solid confidence. So I love that. And the main reason to have you on the show was to understand what imposter syndrome is and how can one really build super like rock solid confidence.
Okay, great question. We're going to hit that in two different parts. First of all, I got this thing. It's not a thing. It's just an idea. I call it the devil's triangle. So imagine a triangle, and down one side, you've got procrastination. Down the other side, you've got perfectionism. And across the bottom, you've got paralysis or overwhelm. And then inside of that, you've got fear of failure, fear of success, feeling like you don't deserve it, that you're not good enough, and all that kinds of stuff. These are all the symptoms, in my view, of imposter syndrome. And what I do with my clients and what people can do at home by themselves is we need to become 18th century explorers. You know, you'd go to a new country and you'd be the mouth of this river, and you go down this river and you got narrower and narrower and narrower. You'd have to jump out of the boat and you'd have to start walking and eventually arrive at the source of this river. And it could be a big lake or a waterfall. And it's the same. These symptoms, the perfectionism and the paralysis and the overwhelm, they come from a root cause. And it's usually something that way, way back when you're at school or when you're a kid or in an earlier job and somebody's criticized you, told you you're not good enough. Maybe your parents said no one more time than necessary. And it's just stuck with you. And these feelings, these beliefs are hidden away, these hidden memories. You don't know you've got them until one day you want to start something and it doesn't happen. And the way I see it, it's a disconnect. This is all of your skills, your knowledge, your experience, your expertise, all that stuff you've worked so hard for over the years. And this is the thing you want to do. And when you don't have imposter syndrome, it's like this. But what happens is you get a wedge. And that wedge could be a bit of perfectionism, like this. There's a line on my website that's just too big or too small, so I can't launch this week. Or, you know what, I've not had that discussion. My hair's not good. I need a better photograph. And the wedge gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And what's happening here is your mind is saying, no, you can't do it. Don't do it. Forget it. Stay away. And the reason it's doing that is our brain has one single function, and that's to protect us. Because, you know, our society has advanced far quicker and far further than we have. Our minds still believe there's a saber-toothed tiger behind every bush. That's why we have fight, flight, or freeze responses. And so if you go through or went through a bad experience in the past, your brain goes, I don't want that to happen again. That really hurt us. That was a saber-toothed tiger bite in the thigh. So it puts all this baggage around that thing. Yeah. And you don't know this. For you, it just happened, you know, way back. Mm-hmm. And it gets stuck. It gets wedged, gets lodged there. And then when you try and do something that's a little bit, you know, out of your comfort zone, a little bit different to what you've done before, you can't do it. I'll give you a classic example. I had a client who was a high flying sales and marketing director of a big company. And she decided to leave work, raise a family. So if we've gone through that, raise the family, she wants to get back into the game again because, you know, she's really good at what she does, but she can't. because she sees all these other people. And she says to me, they're younger than me. They know about the tech more than I do. They know about the new this and the new that and the new the other. They're faster. And basically what had happened was she'd built this wedge because all this stuff she'd built up, all this experience, this expertise was still valid, is still valid. But she, in her mind, her mind's going, no, we can't do that because, you know, we've been out of the game too long. It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. We stick our head above the parapet. People are going to, you know, go, what's she doing back? She shouldn't have been here. She's ancient. She's a dinosaur, you know. People don't actually say that. This is all stuff that our minds tell us because of, you know, the things that we believe in. And it's that simple. Imposter syndrome is created by something that's lodged in your mind, and it's relatively easy to get rid of.
Got it. So you're mentioning that there are a few different things there, and also that it's like the triangle, the devil's triangle, right? And you were also mentioning the fear, or the way that I see it, is it based on fear mostly, or how much percentage does fear has to do with this? Because you already have the, as you were saying, your client, she already has the experience. She knows clearly that, hey, I've done this before. So what role does fear plays there?
It doesn't manifest necessarily as fear. Let me give you another example. I had a client who wanted to launch a brand new business, and she'd got the website ready. She had the content ready. Everything was ready to go. And let's say the launch date was the 1st of January. The 1st of January comes along and she takes a look at the website and she goes, oh my God, on the front page, there's a line of text that's slightly out of alignment. I mean, we're talking like minuscule. So I can't launch now. I'll have to put it back to 1st of February. 1st of February comes along. Oh my God, I can't launch now because I've just realized that one of the modules in my course that I'm selling has got 5 misspelled words and so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. And then we get to like 6 months and she contacts me and says, Paul, I need your help. I'm just like procrastinating, perfectionism, struggling big time. We did the work. We became the explorer. We went back in time and we found out that when this young lady was, 13 or 14, her father was a big name, executive vice president, one of these big American companies, flying around the world doing sales and marketing, all that kind of good stuff. He come home one night in coincidence with my client, comes back with a school report. And she goes, Daddy, look, my school report. It's amazing, isn't it? And he goes, let me see, darling. And he goes, A star, B, A. And then he says the name of a friend or a colleague's daughter. And he says, you know what, darling, Michelle got straight A stars. And so my client, she was devastated. Imagine going home with a report card like that, that's full of A's and one B, and your dad standing there and telling you he's disappointed. So my client then decided that this man who she loved and adored and she'd put on this huge pedestal, yeah, has said he's disappointed her. So she says, right. To gain his admiration, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to be perfect. And so she goes back to school. She works her ass off. She gets A stars. She goes to university, gets her first, gets her master's, goes into business, does really well in business. Da, 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 da. Mm. Then when she wants to start this business, something clicks because it's new and it's different and it's not what she's been used to. And, you know, starting a business, your own business, is messy. It can be messy. There's lots of mistakes we make. There's lots of things. We go down wrong roads and all kinds of things. And this is what happened to my client. She'd gone down this wrong kind of road, and that just threw her because she had to be perfect. She had to have everything absolutely 100% perfect. And you and me know, and the listeners and the viewers know, there's no such thing as perfection.
Yeah.
And so it was that thing that was triggered by something that happened 20, 30 years ago that stopped her from launching a business. And that was imposter syndrome, this perfectionism, this, you know, not feeling that I just can't get it right. I'm just not going to be good enough. And so there was no fear in that at all. It was simply this memory that was stuck in her mind that was just saying, I've got to be perfect because my dad will only love me if I'm perfect. And that's what caused it. That's what caused this blockage, this disentanglement, this disengagement, if you like, between the skills, knowledge, and expertise and the business you wanted to start.
Yeah, understood. So that totally makes sense now. And now, like, that makes me wondering, when is the right time? Because, like, we as entrepreneurs, we are taught, or we, the way we work is like, no, just put it out and see how it's working, and then you're going to perfect it afterwards, right? Because you don't know, most of the time, you don't know what your clients want, right? They want something, but it might not be the right design, the right, I don't know, the right font, the right, some very, very small things that you don't know that that's the right thing to do, you know? So here, as you were saying, also perfectionism, and something that, a follow-up question to that, like how could someone realize that they are dealing with this problem? Because as you were saying, there are two different people or two different examples that you gave, and it's like two different cases. So how would someone like realize that, hey, this is actually imposter syndrome and I'm dealing with something that is like, I shouldn't deal with it because I'm good at this already.
Okay, got two things. First of all, there's a very successful entrepreneur that I follow called Rob Moore. And he has this phrase, start now, get perfect later. And I love that phrase, except for the get perfect later. Because I don't think there's any such thing as perfective. For me, it's continual improvement. Perfection doesn't exist. It's just doing better, doing the best you can, even if it's just 1% every single day. So start now and keep improving. Keep, you know, look at Microsoft. Microsoft was one company when it first started out that it's putting out all this software and it was full of bugs, but they still put it out there and they were still selling it at a premium price because they realized that they could spend 10 years trying to iron out all the bugs and pay a fortune for developers to work on this. So what they did is they threw it out there as it was, and then people started sending the feedback going, well, this doesn't work. When I tap this button, that happens. And so they were getting feedback constantly. And so what did they do? They improved. They put out a new version and a new version and a new version. They reduced the amount of bugs and they improved the quality of the product over time. And that's what we should do as entrepreneurs. You start now with an idea of what you want to do and then do your best you can and work on improving. Now, you will know if you're struggling with imposter syndrome because there'll be something stopping you from doing something. So let's say you're making, I don't know, five figures a month and you want to go to six figures a month and you've tried everything to get to that magic six figures a month, but it's not working. So ask yourself that question. Are you struggling with perfectionism? Are you struggling with overwhelm? Are you struggling with procrastination? Are you feeling that you don't deserve to have six figures a month? You know, maybe that, you know, five figures a month is a safe number for you. You're happy with that. And if you go to six figures, maybe people will start taking notice. Maybe people will start going, who's this Naomi girl? What do you think she's doing making six figures a month? You know, what the hell's going on? Well, how does she deserve that? And this is all the kind of stuff that's going in your head. And you might not realize it's going in your head. All you can think of is I'm doing everything I can to get to six figures a month and it ain't working. Mm. I'll give you another example. I had a client who was trying to go from four figures a month to five figures a month and she just couldn't make it happen. And we did the work, we did the exploring, and we found out, and again, she'd forgotten about all of this, that her parents were in business when she was a kid and the business collapsed. And the Christmas before the business, let's say the business collapsed in April, the Christmas before that April, my client had asked for a bicycle for Christmas. And she got a beautiful pink bicycle for Christmas and she was happy as Larry. The business goes bust. And for some twisted reason, her mind associates herself being responsible for the parents' business going bust because the bailiffs came, took everything away, including her bicycle. And so she thinks, oh, my God, you know, if daddy and mummy hadn't bought me this bicycle, the business would still be going. And so she kind of put an unconscious limit on how much she was worth because of this incident in the back of her mind. There were other things associated with it, but that'll do for the story. Okay. And we had to go back and find that story and just say, look, you know, what happened then was completely irrelevant to what's happening now. And once you've released that, you'll be able to push forward. And she did.
That's super impressive. Regarding what you were just saying, like going back and understand, how would you go back and understand? Like what?
Okay. The way I do it is, you know, working with a client one-to-one, but your client, your viewers, your guests can do this. The first thing you need to do is you need to be serious about wanting to find a solution to the challenge. That's the first thing. Because what I need you to do is to dedicate 1 hour every single week until you've got this resolved. And this hour needs to be somewhere where you're going to be quiet and undisturbed. You've got no deliveries. You're not cooking, not doing any washing, not doing any of that kind of stuff, not expecting anything. So you can be quiet and calm for a whole hour. And once you've done that, you sit yourself down, you turn your phone off, you turn all the comms off, you sit down, you do some deep breaths, and you start to relax. You sit in your favorite chair, it's a great thing to do. And then you just ask yourself, what is stopping me from doing this thing? Don't ask why can I not do this thing? Because if we use the word why, it brings an excuse. Ah, because you're too old, you're too young, you're too tall, you're too green, you're too blue, you're too this, you're too that. And it'll just roll off lots and lots of excuses. Whereas if we say, what is stopping me from starting this business? Or what is stopping me getting from 4 figures to 5 figures a month? Or what is stopping me from losing 20 pounds? Whatever it is, you start to ask yourself this question repeatedly or different versions of the same question. If you're really, really lucky, in that first hour, you'll get an answer. And I'll tell you how that happens in a second. For most people, when they're doing this on their own, it may take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sessions to get the answer you're looking for. When you work with somebody like me, we do it in one session because you've got somebody to facilitate the process. So it's a lot smoother. And the way you'll know you've got the answer, and this, I just love this, is you'll be sitting there going, why can't I do this? What is stopping me from doing this? What is stopping me from starting this business? What? Suddenly your brain will go, your rational brain, the bit that's listening to me now, the bit that's thinking about what you're going to cook for dinner and all that kind of stuff, will suddenly leave a space, a microscopic little space, and your subconscious mind will go, I know the answer. I know, pick me. And you go, it was because when you were 7, your parents' business went bankrupt and you blamed yourself. And then, I see this in my client's face before they've even told me, they go, oh God, Paul, no, it can't be that. That's ridiculous. That's so stupid, Paul. It can't be that thing. And when I see the look on their face and that phraseology coming out, I know they found it. And the cool thing is, I don't even need to know. All I need to know is that the clients found it. And then what you do, once you found it, you do two things. Even though you don't need forgiving because you did nothing wrong, you forgive yourself. And whatever it was back then, you go, no guilt, no shame. I forgive myself. Yeah, I was doing the best I could with the resources I had at the time. I forgive myself. And the second thing we do is we say, look, I thank you for protecting me right now. Because don't forget, that's what the brain's doing. That's what the subconscious mind is doing. It's protecting you from hurting yourself or what it thinks is you're hurting yourself. And you just say, look, I thank you for protecting me, looking after me right up until this moment. But this thing now, I don't need it anymore. It's actually holding me back. So what I want to do is to release all the baggage, all the stuff surrounding this thing. And then you just really just very gently sit there calmly and just imagine the thing, you know, the baggage being blown up, evaporated, melted, dissipated, whatever phrase you want to do. And when it's gone, you'll know it's gone. Again, because I see some of my clients, you know, they come back round and they go, God, I feel so much lighter. I feel like the weight's been taken off my shoulders and their eyes are like searchlights, are bright and, you know, really, really shining. The skin has changed color. The shoulders, which are usually up around here, suddenly drop down and they kind of relax and their face just takes all this color. And then I know they've got it. I know they've done it. And you will get exactly the same sensation if you go through this process. But you have to be patient when you're doing it on your own, because it may not, it's unlikely to happen in the first session. But if you're serious about getting rid of it, you will find the thing and you will find a way of letting go. It may take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or more sessions, but you will get there. And that's how I do it with my clients. And that's how people watching today, listening today, can actually do it for themselves.
Yeah, so I would just, because like, to give a short backstory. So I was first listening to you on Kitty Lai's show, and you also mentioned something similar to this, like what are the best things? She was asking something like, what are the best things or best or quickest tips to do? Mm-hmm. And you know what? After listening to you, and I just like went to the bedroom and it was like dark, you know, like just staying there. And it was like, this is brilliant. Could this really work? And amazingly, it did. And it was like, what's stopping me? You know, what's stopping me? And it's like responsibility. Like you fear to take responsibility for things. And I was like, what? Like I got offended. How do you dare to say such a thing, you know, to myself. So this is like me, my little brain in myself, like talking to you, you know, it's like, how do you dare? How did I? But I was like, no, it's really responsibility. You know, you're afraid of responsibility, you know? And I think that as you were saying, it's really working. Like you just have to be serious about it, because if you're not serious, then it's like, you know, you're finding other things that, okay, it's him, okay, it's him, or it's not you, you know? Most of the time what I find is like, I don't know exactly in your case or in your client's case as well, but can this be you? Can it be you, the person that it's like stopping you? Or because as you were mentioning, in some cases it was your father, you weren't perfect, you're like, it was something from the outside. Can it be also you sometimes that's like,
your mind is blocking you, but the reason is usually external. Maybe you did something, maybe you were at school and you did really good homework, and then one time you forgot to bring your homework in, or something happened, you didn't do your homework. So the teacher goes, Noemi, I'm surprised, I'm disappointed. You're normally the best person in the class to bring this homework in, and you're just not responsible. It's very, very irresponsible to lose your homework. And you know, teachers sometimes go on and on and on and on. Yeah. So that sticks in your mind. You probably feel about that big in the class with all these kids going, look, she's getting told off for the first time ever, you know. And so that little tiny nothing event suddenly becomes this huge mass of stuff that gets lodged in the back of your mind. And you don't know this. You know, you just get on with your day. And then 10, 20, 30 years later, when you want to do something, you want to start something, you can't do it. And you say, responsibility. I can't take responsibility, which is garbage. You missed a thing one time when you was a kid at school. But that's what your brain wants to protect you. And that's what it does. And this is where it all comes from. All of it, all the feelings of low self-worth, low self-esteem is baggage that people have put in your mind and that we don't remember being put in our mind. Mm. And we can get rid of it all.
That's amazing. I love it. And I like, let's touch, because we are 15 minutes in, and I just realized that we are 15 minutes in. It's like a pleasure talking to you. Something else that I would like to touch on, hypnosis. So you're the first person I know a few stuff about hypnosis and how that works, but I think that you're the first person that I came across that I can ask like freely, okay, what hypnosis is, how does it work, and how do you help your clients through hypnosis?
Okay, before we finish, I want to talk about confidence, yeah, because it's really, really important. So hopefully we can extend a little bit.
Sure.
Hypnosis, now a lot of hypnotists are going to hate me for saying this, because it is really, really true, no matter how controversial it is. Hypnosis is simply giving you permission. Imagine, have you ever been to a show where they got people up on the stage and made them do all kinds of ridiculous things?
Yeah.
One of your friends goes up on stage and takes her clothes off or runs around screaming or whatever it is she does, and when she comes back off the stage, you're going, oh my God, do you realize you did this, 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 and this? Your friend's going to go, it wasn't me. The hypnotist made me do it. Mm. And what we're saying is that I'm usually someone who would love to get on the stage, would love to sing and dance and make a fool of myself and have a great time, but people will laugh at me and people will think I'm a fool and people will think I'm an idiot, so I can't really do it. So with hypnosis, the hypnotist is giving the person permission by hypnotizing them to go and do that stuff. Yeah, to stop smoking or to lose weight or to end the depression or to start a business, or because I use hypnosis in my coaching as well. So a lot of it is about releasing stuff that we don't need anymore. All kinds of things. I mean, I've worked with, you know, people who want to stop smoking and can't, and all this kind of stuff, and working with a few women that have been unable to enjoy sex because they can't orgasm. And again, it's about giving them, finding out what it is, the block, and then giving them permission to get back into enjoying their bodies, enjoying the sensations again. Hypnosis is a fabulous tool, but the one important thing, the critical factor is that the client has to want to make the change. Now, I turn away every single day clients because they are the husband of the wife, and the wife has phoned me and gone, Paul, can you help my husband? He's got a drink problem, or he's depressed, or he's doing this, or he's doing that. He's addicted to porn, whatever it is, you know. And I go, no. And they go, why not? I thought you were really good. Why? Unless your husband is prepared to admit that he's got a problem and wants to come to me willingly without you prompting him, I could spend a year trying to make him, you know, trying to get the problem sorted. And it ain't going to happen, because the husband more than likely doesn't want to believe, or simply doesn't believe, that he has a problem. So the client, when they come to you, has to acknowledge that there's something that they want to get sorted. Most of my clients come to me because they've been to the doctor, they've been to this therapist, they've been to that therapist, they've seen all kinds of people, and it hasn't worked. And usually it's kind of 50% that they haven't found the right person, but also 50% that it's just not the right time. It wasn't the right time, and now is the right time. They are determined, they're prepared to pay, they want to get rid of this thing. And then I can do the work with the client, and it's like magic. But it's all about, it comes down to permission. You know, I've been drinking or smoking for 30 years, Paul, and I really, really want to stop. And we find out if there's a really good reason to stop for that person, and then I give them permission. I don't say you have permission, but essentially that's what's happening. Does that make sense?
It does. It just triggers something like, sometimes is it that you're not giving yourself the permission, so you would rather have someone else give you the permission?
You don't even know you need permission. You don't even know you need permission. Again, it comes back to like the imposter syndrome of having this memory in the back of your head that you don't know exists. Like when going up on stage, you may want to go up on stage and sing and dance and have a good time and just be really exuberant and live your life as you really, really want to. But society and your family and your friends have said, no, we don't do that. Not in our family. We are calm. We are serious. You know, we are solicitors. We are lawyers. We are dentists. We are accountants, whatever. We don't do that kind of thing. We behave. We follow the road, you know. And inside, your body's going, no, I want to get on the stage. I want to sing. I want to dance. Make a fool of myself, please. So the only way you can do that is by pretending that somebody is giving you permission. The hypnotist made me do it. He put me on the stage and he did something and I didn't know what happened. It wasn't me. The hypnotist made me do it. It wasn't the hypnotist. You needed the permission to do the thing you really wanted to do, to let go and have a really good time and show your friends you could get up on stage, you could be as wild as anybody. But you need permission.
Super interesting. So how would you, because we are about entrepreneurship or the like online selling, how would you implement that, the same strategy in whatever we're doing, for example, in business-wise?
Oh, it's dead easy. Look at where you are and look at where you want to be and look at what is stopping you from getting to that result. And it's usually, well, there's lots of different reasons, but it's often because you don't feel like you deserve it. Let's take I want to make six figures this year. I want to make £100,000 this year, but you're stuck at 50,000. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have this feeling that you just don't deserve it, that if I make £100,000, people are going to come and take it away from me, or people may think I don't deserve it. People may think I've tricked people into giving me this money. You start to think of all these negative things that could happen if you make that money. Now, of course, all of that is garbage. People aren't going to say that about you, or they might do, but who cares? Yeah. So what we need to do is that we just mentioned is to find out the reason why. Another very important point is you've got to ask yourself, is that what you really want? So many people say, I want to be a billionaire. I want to be a millionaire. Yeah. If that's what you really, really, truly want in your heart of hearts, and you're going to, you know what the benefits to you are of doing that, then you will, you know, you'll sacrifice time, relationships, all kinds of stuff to get to where you want to be. But if that's something that you think you should be saying to people because your guru, your person you follow, the big names, they're all making loads and loads and loads of money, and you think, well, yeah, I want that. Well, maybe you don't. And this is where you've got to put on your big girl pants and your big boy pants. And you've got to say, you know what? I don't want to make six figures a month. I'd be happy with 60,000 a year. That'd make me really happy. If I could make 60 grand a year consistently, I'd be really, really happy. You've got to be honest with yourself, because oftentimes it's not a blockage, or what the blockage is doing is actually saying to you, look, Paul, you don't actually want to be working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for 5 years to make $2 million. You don't really want that, do you? But you have to, the problem is that there's this thing that's going around that says, you've got to have the glamorous wife. You've got to have the glamorous boyfriend. You've got to have the big flashy car. You've got to have the big house. You've got to have the vacations, all these cool places. You've got to. Well, that's, in English, that's bollocks. Yeah, complete and utter garbage. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be anything except what you really, truly want to be. Yeah, maybe you really want to be a photographer. Maybe you really want to paint. Maybe you want to just travel the world. Maybe you want to spend all day sitting watching crappy TV. Well, that's your choice. If that's what turns you on, if that's your thing, then put your hand up and go, yeah, that's me. I don't really want to chase $1 million because what am I going to do when I get there? And I'll probably just spend it all anyway and have to start over again. So two things. Find out what's blocking you, what's holding you back. And secondly, be really honest with yourself. Do you really want to get to that $1 million, that six figures a month, or whatever it is? Because if you don't, you're going to spend your whole life chasing something that you don't want. And I guarantee you, you're going to feel miserable. You're going to feel miserable. I'm working with a client now who makes in excess of 150K a year easily without even blinking an eye. And we had this conversation. He said, you know what, Paul? I have a really hard time setting goals. What do you mean? I said, well, yeah, I'll set goals and then a week later I'll have given them up because they just don't turn me on. And basically what we figured out was that he had everything in his today life sorted out. Everything was brilliant for him, yeah? But there was no destination. There was no legacy that he wanted to leave behind. There was nothing in the future except making 150, 200,000, 300,000 every single year. But why? He couldn't figure out the why. He couldn't figure out the what was it. So we worked together, and my client is now working on a brilliant legacy that he wants to create and build and leave, you know, for future generations.
That's amazing. That's also like triggering one more question, like how, because you were saying like you have to know your why, and the why is going to motivate you. Sometimes your why, it might be because you have to do it. So how do you deal with those kinds of situations?
The question is, what makes you believe you have to do it?
Yes.
What makes you believe you have to do it? Because most of us in the Western world don't have to do anything. Yes, you need to pay your bills, so you need to get a job. That doesn't mean you've got to work 17 hours a day, 25 days a week, you know. It just means you've got to figure out what your bills are and then pay your bills. So most of us don't have to do anything. Just because our parents told us we have to be successful, we have to be rich, that's garbage. That's balderdash, another great word, yeah? You don't have to do that. You are you. You are you, and you do what you want. Not what your husband, not what your wife, not what your boyfriend, not what your girlfriend, not what your mum, not your dad, not your grandpa, not your employer. You don't have to. If your employer is telling you to do things you don't want to do, you have a choice. And it's a difficult choice. I accept that completely. But you can say, no, I'm not prepared to do that. Well, I quit. I'm not saying either of those choices are easy. I'm definitely not saying that. But they are still choices. But you've got to get it out of your mind that you have to do these things. In most cases, you don't.
Totally makes sense. As I was reading up on you and learning some more about you, I found out that you're also, I found first off your YouTube channel, which is amazing. I'm going through like right now. And something that I noticed, you're also dealing with addiction a lot. And I think my question here would be, like, what's the difference between good or bad habits and addiction?
Okay. In a nutshell, addiction is a habit gone wrong. And it's not even that. It's our body craves certain things. And when we're talking about drugs, for example, they are created to make you addicted, because an addicted person wants more and more and more and will pay more and more and more and do whatever it is to get their next fix. So they're created for that reason. And once you're hooked in, it's very difficult to get out, because there's all sorts of chemical reactions going on in your brain that the drug creates, making you want more of the thing. And alcohol is the same as well. It should be illegal the same way certain drugs are, because it has exactly the same effect. People become addicted to it. And the reason why we become addicted to stuff is because, think about why you took the drugs in the first place. Because maybe your life was boring. Maybe your life was, you know, really, really difficult. Maybe your life is really, really challenging. Maybe you're in an abusive relationship. Maybe, you know, you just, some friends suggested it and you tried it out just because they said you should try it out. And you really liked it, so you had some more and some more and some more. Before you know it, you're out of control. So there's lots of reasons, different reasons why people become addicted, but it's often because they're in a situation that they don't want to be in. And the drugs and the booze are an escape from that.
Got it.
It's a very sad thing, but it is that simple. You know, it's very easy to become addicted to something, to a substance, you know, like heroin and coke and all the other stuff. Yeah, it's just so easy to go to step over that line. And when you're in the early stages of this, you've got to be very careful, because you might be thinking, no, I'm not addicted, I've got it under control, it's fine. But if you find yourself craving that thing and thinking about that more than anything else, thinking about your next fix, your next hit, you know, then you are addicted. You're on the road to becoming seriously addicted. And you need to stop and get help now. Same with alcohol. If you're drinking more than... Now, I had a client who was drinking 3 bottles of wine a night when she came home from work. That's more than, you know, that's more, about 4 or 5 times more than the medical advisors say we should be drinking in a day. Yeah. In a week, actually. I think 1 bottle a week is 14 units. And that's pretty much what you should have in a week maximum. She was drinking 3 bottles of wine a night. And we got talking about it. And it was because she was bored at work. She was divorced. She wasn't in a relationship. She had some relationships, but they just didn't work out. And she just felt lost and hopeless and useless. And the only way to kind of eradicate that feeling was to drown it out with booze. And that's what she did. And she was, there's a phrase called the functioning alcoholic. And that's what she was. She was a functioning alcoholic. Nobody knew she had this problem. Nobody knew, because she was able to mask it and hide it and get on with her day. But she had that, and we did some work together, and we did some gradual reduction work, and she's now, you know, free and clear.
That's amazing. I like that you said, like, gradual addiction. Is there such a way, like, because most of the time what I see is, like, people are saying, no, I'm not going to do it anymore, and that's it, versus, like, gradually skipping things or changing things?
There's very few people that can say that we're addicted today and then in the morning they wake and go, I've had it, no more, I'm not doing it again. And that can be done, but it takes a very special kind of person or a very special kind of reason, very important reason for that to stop in that so quickly. I mean, when you go to rehab, you know, they wean you off it. Because your body so needs it so much. That's what addiction is. Your body needs it, it craves it, that you can go into all kinds of horrible kind of negative reactions. Yeah, I mean, if you've ever watched, I can't remember, Gene Hackman, there's a movie, I've forgotten it now, The French Connection, that's it. He gets captured and they turn him into a drug addict. And some friends of his get him out of that place where they've kept him, and they put him through what's called cold turkey, which is like, you know, an instant reduction from being addicted to being not addicted. And it's horrible to watch. It's horrible to see. Yeah. And very few people can go cold turkey like that. That's why these rehab centers exist, to help people gradually lose the toxification that their bodies have built up and their dependence on drug A or B.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the, you know, the pain relief issue in America is such a bad thing, because all those pain relief medications people are taking are so heavily addictive. And people are now, you know, addicted on pain meds. They can't get off them.
Yeah.
And it's causing this huge problem in the States, because they're not drug addicts in the traditional sense. They're not going to the back streets to get a fix. But because the medicine's been prescribed, they get addicted to it. It's very, very difficult. You know, they need help to get off it.
Even if it's not subscribed, let's say like sugar. That's like, no one thinks that sugar is addictive, but it is, you know, like...
Sometimes. Sugar is addictive. Sugar is addictive. People will lose. It's not addictive in the same way. It doesn't cause the same kind of damage, but you put on weight. You're damaging potentially causing damage to your liver and your kidneys, all kinds of bits inside you, you know, and you'll get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Your teeth are going to suffer, and your whole body will start to suffer if you get addicted to sugar. So it has a different impact, but it's just as addictive.
Getting back to addiction, like you're working also with entrepreneurs. Have you seen, or what's the most common traits that, or types of addictions entrepreneurs would have?
I don't see addictions in that kind of sense in entrepreneurs as a generality. One of the things I see is people getting blocked, like we've talked about, people driving themselves into the ground to trying to achieve this thing. And they're working all the hours, they're putting in so much time and effort and energy that families suffer, relationships suffer, life suffers, and they end up burning out and still no closer to where they want to be. Or they get to where they want to be, they realize that they didn't want to be there in the first place, and they just crumple. They just give up because, you know, I've made $1 million, and look, you know, I've lost my wife, I've lost my kids, I've lost my house, I've lost all my friends. Yeah, I've got $1 million, but what else do I have? Nothing. That's why I said earlier on about really making sure that the thing you're going for is something that you really, really want, and not what you think you want.
Yeah, sometimes, like as you were mentioning, I see most people like, I'm happily married. We've been married for, this is the 11th year, you know, and I see that our relationship actually helped us make things better. Like it's easier for me personally to fight through things, you know, but in the same time, as you were mentioning, some people might have been like, they lost their, I don't know, their friends, their wife, their spouse or whatever. And it's like, why can it be like a happily marriage between these two? Like, you know, like some of the time it's like, I must do that in order to get this. How, like, what's the discrepancy there?
The big difference is that I would imagine that you and your husband make lots of effort to keep the relationship fresh and strong and loving and kind, and you talk to each other, you communicate, and that if something's not working, you're going to say, darling, this isn't working. We're X, Y, Z. We're not spending enough time together. We need to stop spending so much time in the office. We need to book a weekend away, or we need to book a Wednesday's date night or whatever. I'm imagining you do that. The problem with a lot of entrepreneurs is they don't even imagine they can do this. They're just so focused, they're so driven on the one goal that everything else just gets like a horse with blinkers in a race course. All it sees is the road ahead. It doesn't see the horses on this side. It doesn't see the horse on that side. It doesn't see the crowd in the stand. All it sees is the path ahead. And a lot of entrepreneurs get the same thing. All they see is the road ahead to that $1 million, that six-figure year. That's all they see. And then so they don't communicate. When the partner goes, darling, look, please take some time off. Let's have dinner. Let's take the kids out for a walk. No, I've got to do this thing tonight. I've got the website needs updating. I've got to contact 15 people. I need to write this post. And that's how they collapse. Because the wife suddenly goes, you know what? I'm sick of this. We're not seeing you. You're not talking to me anymore. We're not having sex. We're not going out for dinner. Nothing is happening in this relationship. It's not working. And you're horrible when you come home. You've had a crappy day and you take it out on us. That's enough. Basta. We're gone.
Mm.
That's what happens. It happens so often because people chase this dream, which isn't their dream.
Mm. That's interesting. And now, regarding going back to stalking you, I'm doing air quotes here on YouTube. I loved your take on Life According to Yoda YouTube video. And it was like, don't try, do. So that's kind of like the entrepreneur mindset of solving things. Sometimes what I see, though, it's like because we're doing things, it's like barely enough time to analyze if we are doing things right, or if we're doing it the right way, or the, I don't know, how to minimize risk somehow. And this like a follow-up on what you were saying, like, where do you see that is going? Like, just do things versus like making yourself think fast enough to know that the things you are doing, at least they are like 99% or 80% right, or the correct direction.
Right. Okay. So first of all, that post, the video that I did was about the difference between doing something and trying to do something.
Correct.
Because if you say I'm trying to do something, you're not putting in a lot of effort. Oh, I'll try to get there at 2 o'clock. I'll try to build this website, or I'll try to do this. Whereas if you say, I'll be there at 2 o'clock, you will be there at 2 o'clock, unless your car breaks down or there's a traffic problem, you will be there at 2 o'clock. If you, the website, I'm going to build this website. So you build the website, you get it done. Even if it's a one page website with lots of mistakes, it doesn't matter. It is done. You know, start now, do better later, get it done. What you're talking about is making the time to do your due diligence. And by that, I mean, not running in to buy this course that's going to solve all of your problems without doing the research. Does this person know what they talk about? Has this person really made all that money? Is it worth that investment? So many people see the shiny website with the smiling entrepreneur going, here's a check for £5 million. I'm going to burn it because I'm just so rich, you know. And they see that and go, oh, my God, he's actually burning a check for £5 million and all this kind of garbage, yeah? All those photographs of people laying on big wads of money, it's fake money. It's not real money. It's fake. But people get taken in by this. So when I say do your due diligence before you start something, it's do the research. If you want to become an entrepreneur, then make sure that you're going to be prepared to put the hours in, the time in. Make sure that you know about, you know, accounting and the tax laws wherever you are. Know about what legal requirements you need to do this thing, what certification you need, all this kind of stuff. And then once you've done that and you think, yeah, you know what, I can do all that, I've got all that sorted, and yeah, I'm going to go for it. Bang, then you do it. But, you know, it's two separate things. Doing, but before you do, we must have the research sorted out. We must have the due diligence sorted out. That's important.
Yeah, thank you so much. You actually like clarified way better the my question, because that was my question. And yeah, I think why it's so important what you said, it's because most of the time what I see in the entrepreneurs' world, and especially in the Amazon mindset or the Amazon stage, what's happening is people are finding out, as you were saying, about, wow, I can do like, I can make 6 figures per year. And this is like, wow, for them, or the Lambo and, you know, all those courses that are being sold, and somehow they are being sold on something that it's fake or it's not real, or it's like, they're not thinking, they are talking about gross numbers, not net, you know? And so sometimes it's like tricky, because afterwards you're trying it out and you see, hey, this is like such a, I don't know, such a bad person, or because they teach me something that is like not real, you know? And sometimes it's not going to be, hey, it was my responsibility to do my due diligence on things, you know? And sometimes it's like funny, because all the time you find fault in someone else rather than realizing, hey, it was me. I should have done my research.
There's one simple question you can ask yourself. If somebody says, I'm going to give you the 10 most important secrets to making it as an Amazon whatever, ask yourself this question. If these things are so secret, why is he sharing them with me? And if that person says, well, because I want to share this with other people. No, if your business is really successful and you're flying, you're doing well, the last thing you're going to do is, unless you're completely miles ahead of everybody else, is you're not going to share your secrets. Your secrets, you've worked for them. You've built that knowledge. You've built that experience. You've built that expertise. You're not just going to go throwing them out to people for a couple of grand.
Yeah.
Normally, with a lot of people that have been successful in various things like pay-per-click or Amazon or drop shipping, they got in at the very, very early stages when nobody else was doing it. And so, yeah, they made a load of money. But then lots of other people found out about it, started getting in, and it's a lot harder to get in. Like, you know, drop shipping works and all kinds of things work, but you've got to have the right information. You've got to have the right product. You've got to be there at the right time with the, you've got to have the right price differential and all this. I mean, I know nothing about Amazon selling and buying, but it's like a business. You've got to have your numbers down pat, and you've got to have a product that 50 million other people aren't selling. Yeah. What happens is, if there are 20 people all selling the same product from the same factory in China, I'm there and I'm going, well, they're all the same. That one's the cheapest one. Yeah. And next week I go back on and somebody's dropped their price lower than this one. Oh, it's even cheaper. And it becomes a sliding slope on the way down to see how cheap you can get. And before you know it, you're losing money on every product you sell.
Yeah, correct.
So with whatever thing you're going to be doing, whether it's MLM, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Shopify, T-shirts, anything, make sure you've done your due diligence, that the person knows what they're talking about, that there is space in the market for you. Because it's easy for them to say, you've got to find your niche. Yeah. You've got to find your niche. Well, it's very difficult to actually find a niche now, because pretty much everything has been done. People are selling bicycles and tricycles and unicycles and God knows what else. Yeah. So you have to really spend a lot of time before you invest a penny in finding something that you can get into. And then once you've got into it, you've got to expect people to jump in very quickly afterwards. So you kind of got to make your mark with being really good at customer service and really good at helping people out and finding deals and negotiating, all the rest of it. Because once you've found your niche, you start selling that stuff on Amazon, as an example, somebody else go, oh, look, Paul's selling pink unicycles for elephants on Amazon. And he sold, look, he sold 55 this week. We need to find a manufacturer who can build us one as well.
Yeah.
And we'll sell it, you know, for $50 cheaper. And so you've got competition, and then more competition, more competition. And before you know it, your price starts to come down and you have to start looking for other things to sell.
Yeah,
it's very, very difficult. You know, there is no such thing as a unique niche anymore in whatever market. I mean, even with what I do, there are thousands of people that do what I do or similar things. It comes down to know, like, and trust in my business. People have to get to know me. They've got to decide whether they like me or not, and that whether they trust me, and that I have to be there when they need me or when they're ready to work with me.
Definitely. I totally agree with you. By the way, just to add there also, because you were saying it's so hard to find a niche, in my perspective, because, for example, our product that we're selling, it's also, I didn't know about it, but it's actually called a Me Too product. So we made something like a better mousetrap, let's say, you know, and even then it's like, as you were saying, they have to know, like, and trust you. And if you are better than anything else that's there, even if it's like a high market, it's like a very competitive niche and very competitive market, you can still make it, you know?
Yeah.
So definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can still make it, but you've got to be different. You've got to be really, really good. If somebody complains, you've got to zoom in and deal with it straight away. You've got to be different. Even though you're selling the same product, you have to differentiate yourself. Absolutely.
Correct. Correct. To be very respectful of your time, because I would have lots of questions otherwise. some quick fire questions before wrapping up. What's the best under $50 purchase you recently made that improved your interpersonal skills?
The best purchase under $50?
Yes.
This is going to surprise some people. I've started learning to read the tarot, not in the sense of you will meet a tall, dark, handsome stranger or you're going to win the lottery or something, but using it as a tool to help business people get around really, really difficult questions or dilemmas. And I'm learning this. I've spent a bit more than this, cost less than $50, but I've invested in some courses and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible how amazingly accurate these things are. So that's, I mean, I bought other things for less than $50, but that's a really, really good investment for me. And I'm really enjoying the process of learning.
That's amazing. I'm going to check it out. Never did. What are your most favorite books? Three of them, and why? Or two of them.
Okay. My favorite book of all time is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. It's a beautiful story. You can read it in a couple of hours. And the thing I like about it is that it's all about going for your dream, not somebody else's dream, going for your dream, and then doing whatever it takes within reason to get there. And then and surmounting every obstacle that comes along. And one part of the story, this young lad goes across to North Africa, and within an hour, he's robbed of all his money. Now, he could have given up and tried to get back to Spain, but he doesn't. He perseveres, and he figures out a way forward. And that is the story all the way through. It's a really, really brilliant book, and I love it. My second favorite book is one that I've read a couple of times, and it's, who's the author? Maxwell Maltz and Cybernetics or Cybernetic Thinking. I can't remember the title now. And it's brilliant because he covers all the stuff we've talked about. Yeah, but he was writing, God, maybe 70, 80 years ago. And my copy of the book is bookmarked and there's bits missing from it and all kinds of things. So I revisit that book on a regular basis.
Can you tell me, please, once again how it's called? Because I'm going to look this all up so our audience can be provided with them.
Let's have a look. Let's just go Maxwell Maltz. That's it, Psycho-Cybernetics. Where are we going? So P-S-Y-C-H-O and then Cybernetics, C-Y-B-E-R-N-E-T-I-C-S.
Awesome. Got it.
Okay. And you can get the audio book or the Kindle or a proper paperback. And it's really good. Third book is actually a series of books. It's Harry Potter series.
You know who else likes a lot Harry Potter? Carlos, actually the main host of the show.
Yeah, I love it. I just love the books are so brilliantly written and you can get really lost in those books. I recently, well not recently, but just before Christmas, I bought the audio version on Audible. And there's a guy called Stephen Fry, who's a British actor, very mm-hmm. famous actor. And he reads all of these seven books and he does it brilliantly. He acts the character parts. He really draws you into the book. And I've stayed up till 2-3 in the morning some nights listening to finish, you know, one section of a book because I was so drawn into it.
That's amazing. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We'll look everything up. I think the last question would be, how can people get a hold of you, say maybe hi or know more about your services?
Okay, really easy. My Facebook business page, my Instagram, and my LinkedIn are all Paul Wilson Coaching, all one word. Paul Wilson Coaching. And you can find me on those three. I don't use Twitter that much, but I'm on Twitter in the same name, Paul Wilson Coaching.
Awesome. Will do. Well, Paul, this was amazing. I loved our conversation and I love that I asked only a few questions, just let you to like express yourself because it was amazing. And I think that sometimes, or most of the time, you're learning more by listening to someone rather than only asking questions, you know? So,
two of these, one of these, use them in that proportion. It's an old saying, but it is so valuable. That's why my podcast, I let the guests do all the talking and I interject very, very little. Thank you for your time. It's been really good.
Your podcast, please, could you make a pitch for the podcast as well? Because I listened to a few of your episodes. So if you would like to share it with the audience.
Yeah, it's called the Happy Head Podcast. And I won't put the link in now, but I'll give you the link after mm-hmm. we finish this and you can find sure. it. And it's all about people telling their stories of how they've overcome adversity and come out the other end smiling. I've had an award-winning author who should have been dead 20 years ago and she's still here doing amazing things. I've had people that have gone through cancer, women that have gone through horrendous abuse in, you know, narcissistic relationships and have had to leave their home with their kids and the clothes on their back and now running 3 or 4 different businesses. There's been a whole range of people. And I feel so privileged that my little podcast has brought me together to have a conversation with these people. It's definitely worth checking out. There's about 34 episodes that are published at the moment.
Awesome. 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 We'll do so. And we'll have the link as well. So thank you once again. And for everyone listening or watching this, thank you for your time. See you next Monday. Till then, bye.
Bye.
It was fun sharing this episode with you. If you found value in what you've heard, please show your love with a subscribe, rate, and a review of the show. Until next time.